Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bauer. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving arts scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we are talking with Jan Shropshire. Jan, welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Before the show, you and I were talking, and you were talking about something that sort of piqued my interest, just because it was so revealing and sort of vulnerable in a way, I suppose. Two of the things, actually, that you mentioned, before we get into your background and that kind of thing, but two of the things you mentioned was struggles with depression and struggles with diabetes. And, you know, I know there's this... this image out there that you know, artists are, you know, people who drink too much, or you know, or crazy, or they all struggle with depression or whatever the deal is. Certainly that's not the case, but it is interesting that this is something that I think probably hundreds if not thousands of people listening right now struggle with, either diabetes. I have friends who now are getting older, have type 2 diabetes.
Sure.
And I certainly have plenty of friends who've struggled with depression.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect you? How does that affect your work as an artist?
Well, I don't paint about it. I don't paint about my diabetes.
Right.
Or my depression specifically, but it certainly affects it.
Were you diagnosed when you were young with diabetes?
I was, yes.
Oh, you were, okay.
I was 9 years old, so I've had it
for 30 years.
Yeah, and it makes a profound impact on a person's life. When you have a chronic illness, the weight of that just really makes you aware, like hyper aware of life and death.
Yeah, and somebody once said, if you want to live a really long time, get a chronic illness when you're young.
There you go. And then you can make the most out of life, I think.
Well, you make the most, but you also take really good care of yourself.
Well, yeah, at some point.
Or some people do, I don't know.
Some people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to make the decision to, you know, either go with it or not.
Yeah.
Really. But, yeah, when you have diabetes or cancer or anything else, you're really hyper aware of death, because you have these moments where you could just fall apart, like with low blood sugar or whatever strange thing happens with your disease. So my whole life, basically, I've asked myself the question, you know, how do I want to spend my time?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How do I want to spend my time?
Hasn't
Even
been
when I was a child.
Yeah.
How do I want to spend my time? So it's made a profound impact on my life, because I might, you know, have an office job or something.
Ah, okay.
You know,
so it gets into, instead of the easy answer of, well, I'm going to do what society kind of tells me to do and go along to get along, all of a sudden you're put in the position of, so what do you really want to do?
Right, because...
Because you don't maybe have forever here.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, this is it.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I mean, it's true for all of us, but most of us don't think about it that way.
Right.
You know, I mean, all of us, you know, what's that corny old expression, you know, live every day like it's your last, but think that you're going to, you know, live forever or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
So it really affected your choice to be an artist.
Subconsciously, you know, I can look back on it now and say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you decided that this is really what resonates with me, as opposed to what resonates with what society says I should be doing, or my parents say I should be doing, or...
Yeah, this is what I want to do with my time. Whether it works or not, I mean, you have to try.
Yeah,
you have to try.
Yeah. Well, works. What does that mean for you?
I guess I'm talking about money, because
I
make a living as an artist also, and it can be pretty scary, because you don't ever know if you're going to make any money or not. And the bills always come.
Yeah, right. They do have a way of showing up.
Yeah.
See, those are the people who are out doing the other thing.
Right.
If everybody was an artist, it would be great. There's an idea. We can start a new movement. Make the whole world and turn the whole world into artists. Well, let's back up now that we've sort of talked a little bit about why, you know, you're an artist. And tell me a bit about your background and your training. You said you come from Mississippi, which...
I was born in the Mississippi Delta.
You don't have a strong accent.
I do.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. It just
okay.
Depends.
All right. Cleaning up your act, are you?
I am. Yeah, I grew up in Mississippi and went to Mississippi State, which is pretty much identical to Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Same type of college. And I went there for horticulture and was taking botany and biology and some business classes and had to take my first art class and went into the art department.
You had to take your first art class?
Had to take my first art class because I was going into floral design.
Right.
And it was divided up into three parts, plants and business and creativity.
Right, okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I go into the art department and I just never leave. I just couldn't pull myself away to go to these other classes.
Right.
So my second semester of my junior year, I changed my major to art, which was pretty terrifying to my mother.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
it's a very conservative environment down south.
Yeah.
I mean, as it is here, but
right.
it's worse down there. And it's just highly impractical. It's kind of insane
right.
that someone mm-hmm. would actually major in art. Mm-hmm. You know, why? Mm-hmm. Why in the world would you do that?
Right. You've sort of had this journey, also. So you weren't a kid who was drawing and doing
no.
things all the time.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I was doing little crafty things. You know,
right.
During the summer, I would go to. We would have these classes in someone's garage, and a woman would be in charge, and we'd paint these like ceramic cats or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I remember being a kid, and the kid next to me would do just a horrible job, and I would just be horrified that they would do such a sloppy job. You know, I'm looking around me, I'm going, what is with these people? Don't they know how to paint right? But that's really the only experience I had with art as a kid.
Okay. So you went to Mississippi State,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, what happened?
After that, I graduated in 91, May of 91, and I literally looked at a map, pulled this map out, and I thought, now I want to stay in the South, but I got to get out of the deep South, and if I ever want to make a living as an artist, I got to get out of here.
Right.
Right. And I couldn't bring myself to, you know, like move to New York. That was just too much of a step, and I wanted to stay in the South, and so I looked at Atlanta. And a lot of my friends had gone there, and I had been there, and that just really didn't do anything for me. And so I saw Richmond on the map, and I thought, well, that's pretty much as north of the South as you can get.
Right.
And it just seems like a really good location. It's close to D.C. It's close to New York. So in July, August of 91, I just moved to Richmond.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
So just the other day, 16,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
16
years ago?
16
years
ago.
Yeah, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you said you make a living from your art.
Because
mm-hmm. A lot of people I talk to don't.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle with, you know, working a full-time job and mm-hmm. making art. How do you do that?
Not real sure. It's a leap of faith is what it is. When
yeah.
I was 10 years ago, when I was 29, I quit my job. I was working at the Jefferson Hotel. And I was a bartender, and I just thought, I just can't do this anymore.
Right.
And just up and quit. And I thought, you know, I never want to have a job again. I just want to make art. Okay, so I thought, where do you live in Richmond where you don't have to have a job? And this was 10 years ago.
Right.
So I thought, Oregon Hill.
Oregon Hill, yeah.
So I moved to this incredibly cheap place in Oregon Hill.
Where were you in Oregon Hill?
On Pine Street.
Okay. I mean, most people in Richmond know if you're driving by, sorry. But
across from the barbershop.
Yeah,
the
right. Okay,
location.
Across from Michael's Place. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right,
great.
Yeah. Yeah, we lived in Oregon Hill for, I don't know, 5 years down in the last house on the left on Laurel Street.
Did you?
It was great.
Okay.
It was great. It was $125 a month.
Yeah.
We had just come from a loft in New York that was $1,000 a month. So we kept saying to the landlord, $125 a month? Really?
What year was that?
Oh, wow. 1980,
okay.
or 81, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And Oregon Hill was still sort of,
yeah,
you know, rough and, you know, and tumble kind of place. And the first thing I did the first night I was there was because we were renting the place, and because I was young and didn't really, and was crazy, I took a chainsaw and cut a hole in the side of the house.
Okay.
Because it was, you know, there were no windows facing the river. None. And I wanted to see the river. So I did this thing, and Sally came home about, my wife came home about, fell over. But anyway, I'm handy, so I put a window in. So
okay.
So in the end, that was an improvement.
Was it a stained glass window?
No, it wasn't stained glass.
Just a plain old window.
Yeah, just plain old window. But you could see the river. And okay. So for $125, we had a great view of downtown Richmond, and you could see the river. So so go ahead.
Oh,
so
my rent was $200 in 1997.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
And long story short, I met the guy who lived upstairs from me, and I noticed that he had an art collection, and I asked him if he was gay, and he said he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I married him, and now we have this beautiful child, and just a few months ago, we sold our house in Oregon Hill.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, we bought the house that we were living in, and then we just sold it a few months ago.
We're
just crazy. It was crazy.
Well, where are you now?
We're in the north side.
Oh, you are?
Over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Anyway, we started to talk about this a little bit, but the different media that you've used, you've had sort of this journey through photography, stained glass, mosaic, jewelry, pottery, sculpture, watercolor.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Talk about that.
But
what's
wood,
that?
I think.
Well, there's wood to come, right? There's plenty of time for wood.
I loved art school. I loved every single class in art school. And when I got out, I just knew I wanted to make things, and I didn't really know what. I didn't have a vision, and I haven't had a vision, a specific idea in mind for years and years, but I knew I wanted to make something, and I really enjoyed stained glass, so I did that for years, along with doing other things, but I did the stained glass most of the time.
So these were pieces that were... typically stained glass, rectangles, squares, whatever. What were you doing?
Decorative pieces, yeah.
Were you creating images? Mm-hmm. Were you creating abstract images, realistic images?
A little bit of everything.
Right.
Yeah, just whatever looked good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone gave me a kiln, a glass kiln. Oh, and we went to Italy, and I bought this little fused glass fish. And then I came back home, and I started fusing glass, which means, you know, to throw the glass in the kiln and melt it a little bit.
Right.
And it all bonds together and becomes one piece, and got really good at that, and then started going around to these outdoor shows and selling these little fused glass pieces.
Right.
And this was before 9/11, so I was actually making some money then. I didn't realize it at the time, but yeah, I was.
Right. Yeah. What impact did 9/11 have?
The show I had right after 9/11 was in Bethesda, Maryland. And it was in October of that year, and it was fantastic. Everybody was, I don't know if they were celebrating life or, you know, just coming back out, but people were out. And that was the last really good show I had.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Huh.
The economy for art just, you know, just fell off.
For that kind of, yeah, for that kind of thing.
Because,
you know, the really high-end stuff, I guess, is still going big time
right.
in New York City and places like that. But you also have to be 22 years old and be the hot item. I mean, it's really become... What do you think about that? What do you think about art being such a commodity?
I don't know. I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, I mean that, for instance... There are young artists in New York that are not very well known that people are gambling on, and they're buying their work because they think, gee whiz, 5-10 years from now, the work's going to be worth a lot of money, as opposed to, you know, buying a piece of art because you love it or because it,
right.
you know, is really sort of an astounding artistic accomplishment.
Well, I mean, I think there's two different lines of thought that you just... described, and some people are more on the business end like that and do buy for investment, and I would think that most people don't, I guess because my friends don't,
right?
And that's what I know, that people just are struck by something, you know, it speaks to them, and they want to live with it for a while, and that's why they buy art.
Well, if you're not fusing glass, what are you doing these days?
What am I doing these days? Well, I can tell you what I've been doing for the past 3 years. is I've been working with my sister, and she went to VCU and majored in ceramics.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I have been making ceramics and sculpture, and we've been going to a wholesale show in Philly every year called the Buyer's Market for American Craft.
Right, yeah.
And it's put on by the Rosen Group, and it's a lot of fun. It's crazy expensive, but you go and you set up all your stuff, and there's probably about 1,500 artists there, and then gallery owners and gift shop owners and craft shop owners will come by and place orders with you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, some people can make their living doing this,
mm-hmm.
and there's a handful of people in Richmond that have or still do make their living doing this, but we did it for 3 years, and we grew each year, but we just gave ourselves 3 years and then decided to move on to other things.
Right.
You know, it worked for us, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it could have, you know, kept on growing, but we were ready to move on. So I'm painting now.
Oh, you are?
I am. Finally painting seriously, like on a daily basis for the first time since art school. I mean, I've been painting over the last 16 years off and on, and I have just a room full of unfinished paintings.
Yeah, you said you had 200?
Something like that.
Really?
Really, yeah.
What's that about?
I've just always had a hard time finishing something. Like, I sit down, I have no problem starting it. But I
How do you know when it's finished? How do you know they're not finished? That's probably a better question.
They just don't look right to me.
They don't look right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I know they're not finished because I give up is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I start something and then I get frustrated because it gets really difficult about 3/4 of the way through.
Why?
I don't know. It just always does.
Uh-huh.
It always does. It's either something technical, like I'm trying to do hands. I'm trying to get them proportionately to look, you know, plausible, or I don't know. I don't know what it is.
So why do you keep doing this?
I don't keep doing it because this is how I want to spend my time. Yeah.
Really?
Why do I want to spend my time like this? That's the next question. I guess it's...
I mean, obviously you don't feel like you're failing at this.
No.
No? You feel like you're... That this is a... What? A journey.
It is. It's growth and progression.
Uh huh.
It's constant growth, and it's, well, when I go in and paint, and when I have a really good day, it's like tapping into unconsciousness, your own, and how it connects with the rest of the world, and that's why to me the outcome is more important than the process, because I want to finish a piece and have it displayed and have someone come by and stop and look at it and think, I like this. I don't know why I like it, but something about it is really resonating with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's just for a few moments, time stands still. Like while I'm painting,
right.
Time stands still for me,
right.
Because I'm so focused.
Right.
And when someone else sees the work, even if it's just for a moment, time stands still for them. You know, they're
mm-hmm.
captured.
Mm-hmm.
And that is tapping into the unconsciousness.
Yeah, I mean, what is that? I've had people talk about that.
You know?
I mean, I think everybody's sort of had that experience, you know, whether it's someone who's sort of a crazed sports fan, you know,
right.
They sort of transcend.
Right.
You transcend. I guess in simple language, you transcend your own ego. You sort of cease to exist,
mm-hmm.
And you just become a part of whatever this is.
Right.
I don't. You know.
Right. And it can happen with anything. I mean, not just painting, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a runner's high.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what anything else.
No, I really think it can happen with anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think somebody could be sitting, you know, working
meditating
in the stock market.
Yeah,
and you know, and have moments where they're so fused with what they're doing
right.
that their self consciousness, their self awareness,
right, just falls away.
Falls away.
Yeah.
So they're so, sort of on this. I mean, which essentially, I guess, is sort of the end goal of of religion. Mm-hmm. In a sense, it's a, you know, I've said to people, you know, the hardest thing to do in the studio, it seems like for most artists, is to get out of your own way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, you've got to learn a lot about art history, and then you sort of have to forget about it.
Right.
But not really forget about it, because
right.
otherwise you're just making silliness,
right.
stuff other people have made, and you
and
just don't
I
know.
And I discovered that it takes a really long time. And that's part of my frustration.
What does?
Everything that you've just described.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it's taken me 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
To go through all that to get to where I am now, painting on a daily basis. To get out of my own way.
To get out of your own way.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
taken a really long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the process for you? Is there a process? I mean, do you have a ritual you go through to...
When I go into the studio?
To get out of your own way. What's your get out of your own way ritual? Or is there one?
Well, I listen to 97.3...
There's this really good show
every
on there.
Day in the studio.
Right.
No, I'm in my space, and your space is so important if you're an artist or not. I mean, everybody needs some sort of space where they can just retreat to. I remember when I was a kid, I had a treehouse, and I spent a lot of time alone in the treehouse.
Really?
Yeah. And just having a space, you know, your sacred space that mm-hmm. you can go to and just do your thing. Is so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. I think if you don't have that, there's just this hole inside of you, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because everyone needs to go to a place and be alone and be centered in some way from time
right.
to time.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not, then you're just like tripping through the day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand totally. Well, we're just going to take a short break here. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, which was just mentioned graciously by our guest, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us, and we're talking with Jan Shropshire about her creative process as an artist, and now let's get back to the interview. So you're no longer making, I guess it would be referred to as craft kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct.
But you're painting.
I'm painting, yeah.
So back to the issue of, so how do you make a living?
Oh, so how do I make a living? Well, like I said, for the past 3 years, we've been doing the wholesale show.
Mm-hmm.
And people would place orders, and then we would come back home and fill the orders. And so that's what I've been doing the past 3 years, and that has just recently stopped.
Right.
We've just wrapped that up. I'm still getting calls for orders, and
really?
I'll still fill those,
mm-hmm.
but the rest of the time I'm painting, and I've got money saved up from the orders.
Right.
So right now I'm just kind of in limbo with that. I'm uh-huh. not really making a living, but I have reserves, and also I have connections. Like, we have our ceramic work in 50 to 60 galleries around
oh, really?
The United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I just called a gallery in North Carolina called the Red Sky Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And they had sold a piece of my sister's sculpture. And they said, you know, if you have more sculpture, send it down. And if you have some paintings, send them down.
Right.
So I have those kind of connections now, where some of these galleries that have been selling our sculpture will, you know...
How did you end up in 50 or 60 galleries? That's an enormous...
With the wholesale shows, the people that come
by. Oh,
okay.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They're not all galleries. Some
right.
are like gift
shops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things yeah. like that.
But probably half of them are craft galleries, and then a handful of them are fine art galleries.
Well, talk about your paintings. What are you... Do you start with an idea? Are you interested in the... Yeah, just talk about your paintings. Are you interested in realism? I mean, I've seen the pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there's realism in there. But what are you doing?
I'm interested in just the visual image and what it tries to convey. And I think symbols are very important. And I think...
Why? What do you mean by that?
Symbols.
Yeah.
Symbols are like visually how we speak to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And symbols have been around since the beginning of time. Like right now, I'm using a lot of bird imagery. And I took a class not too long ago, and the very first slide that the woman put up on the board was an image of a bird. And it was from, I don't know how many millions of years ago.
Right, right.
But it was one of the first artifacts ever found. Mm-hmm. I think it was a tool, it was a knife or something, but it was also decorated with a bird head on the top.
Right.
And so this is something that is part of the consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that is in us, that we, you know, we haven't realized, or we don't think about these things until we're faced with them, faced with the images, and then it strikes us, and we don't know why.
Right.
But that's important for me, the visual imagery, and other people looking at it and trying to, not really figure it out, but trying to, when they say, oh, I like this, and they don't know why, and so they study it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, one last thing. You had said that you were interested, or at least willing, to talk about depression. Mm-hmm. Is that something you've dealt with for mm-hmm. a long time? Or?
It is, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how does it impact you as an artist?
Well, I think maybe that's one of the reasons why I haven't finished many paintings until recently,
mm-hmm.
is that I would just get so frustrated and so, you know, down on myself,
right.
that I would just make myself stop.
Right.
You know, these voices in your head say, that's no good. You know, that's just, that's terrible. Why even
right.
keep doing this?
Right.
And when you have a lifetime of that,
mm-hmm.
those habits and those thoughts are just, they're monumental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just so hard to get past.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you gotten past them?
A lot.
Ah, good.
Gotten past a lot of it.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We're out of time. It zooms by.
It does.
And I wish we had more, because I'm sure there's a lot more we could talk about. I want to thank you folks for listening. And I want to thank you. By the way, do you have a website or something people can tune into?
I did, but some bill didn't get paid or something.
Oh, really?
And it's gone.
Oh,
so
gone with the bill. I think I saw that movie. But anyway, thank you all for listening. We hope to see you for lunch again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And thank you, Jan.
Thank you.